What's that boy? Dad, over there! Is that a Yeti?
It's just his hair, son.
At last! Saved after all these years! Stuck up this cursed mountain, licking moss with only a crow for a friend. How'd you find me?
Just walking the dog. Need a lift back down?
Run for a crow?
Adventures never far with the Land Rover Discovery Sport. Now £339 per month on Land Rover personal contract hire.
Oh, heated seats.
Land Rover. Above and beyond.
Initial rental £4,068. 48th month term. Subject to status. 8,000 miles per annum. Conditions apply. Offer ends 31st of March. Participating retailers only. Such Land Rover offers.
This podcast is part of the Bomb Pod Media Network.
Hello, hello, friends. Welcome to another subscribe-worthy episode of The Media Matters. I'm your host, Chantel, and I have the always delicious Miss Marie Rose by my side.
Hello, everybody.
She's actually not by my side. She's right across from me. But tonight, you guys, we're talking about cursed movies, because who doesn't want to hear about a cursed movie?
Yeah. Haunted movie sets always a good story.
I know. But before we jump into that deliciousness, I want to shout out my Bomb Pod family. It's the podcast network dedicated to bringing its listeners the very best content you can find anywhere whilst while also supporting the artists that create those podcasts with a focus on true crime, mystery, and more incredible content that is sure to make your soul super happy. So, who is part of the Bomb Pod family? We've talked about it. I mean, we've talked about it a lot.
Tell me again.
I'm going to tell you again. I'm gonna. Okay, so you guys, these podcasts really are very good. I've listened to every one of them. So good. So much talent in this group.
And they're all awesome sauce.
They're all awesome sauce. And saucy awesomeness. They're just good. So there's the wonderful Mysterious Radio, Hillbilly Horror Stories, Irreverent Nests, This Week in True Crime History, The Confessionals, True Crime Historian, 36 Times, STAT, also known as Shocking Traumas and Treatments, Weird Darkness, The Intro Knot, Daily Dose of Weird News, The Brohio Podcast. I'll have to show you what their cover art looks like because you will mess up the name just like I did. But no more, because now I'm the wiser. Gone Cold, The Higher Side Chats, Paranormal Punchers, Punch Farm Podcast, and yours truly, The Media Matters.
The best one ever.
Ever. So make sure you guys, you check out Bomb Pod Media on Twitter at Bomb Pod Media, on Facebook at Bomb Pod, and on their website at bombpodmedia.com for updates, podcasts, exclusive content, and so much more. And be sure to check out these wonderful podcasts because they really are fantastic. You guys, I'm not just saying that. I love to support an awesome podcast because I've said it before. I know how much goes into making an episode. Like, oh my God, it's ridiculous. The hours spent researching and editing and recording and crying and
crying.
It's a lot. It's snacking. It's a lot. It's a lot. So when I do find a good podcast, I love to tell everybody about it because I really want to support my fellow podcasters. So make sure that in addition to checking them out, which I really hope you guys do, that you subscribe to their shows and please, please, please make sure you leave an iTunes review for them, for us, all of us, whatever. But please be sure to do that because those reviews really do help others to find the shows and to keep them growing. And that's what we're after all. We want to share all this magic with like as many listeners as we possibly can. Plus, more subscribers and reviews means we get more opportunities to do bigger things for all of you because we love you. So then, it's October. I'm still happy because it's my month. And it's that time. We are now officially in the thick of it and we are airing 2 episodes a week. And we both look exhausted.
Crazy ladies.
It is a lot of work. So you guys, there's still time. If you have a topic you want to hear for the month of October or a ghost story you want to submit, send it all to the medium at themediummatters.com. And we will be sure to use that content in one way or another. And I know I've talked about this in the last few episodes. If you guys would prefer to record yourselves telling these stories, send those recordings in, because I would love to hear you guys tell these stories yourselves. Audible is just, you know, it makes the ears happy. Don't you think?
Definitely. You make the ears happy.
I do. I really do. Just kidding. So you guys, yeah, if you can record yourselves telling those stories and send them in, please make sure you do. And, you know, again, send them to the medium at themediummatters.com, and we will play it on our listeners' ghost stories episode. Now then, let's get on with the show and start the scary with some cursed movies. Are you ready?
Girl, I'm trying. I'm trying. You know I don't do scary movies. They give me nightmares.
Then this is not the episode for you. So we covered in our last episode Mirrors. And you know what I forgot to say? Which I think I've said before. And this is just to get the creep going. I've meditated before and seen people come out of my mirror.
What?
Remember me telling you that?
No.
Hence the look on your face right now. Yeah, I have. It's happened a few times. I've been sitting in here. I mean, we record in the same room where I do my meditations.
You saw something coming out of that mirror behind me.
Out of
me.
That mirror, yeah. It's happened a few times. Like,
you're going to make me start looking over my shoulder now at this mirror, aren't you?
It's happened a few times. Like, I would say less than a handful. Less than a handful. But it has happened. And in meditation, if I could say the word, I've seen that, like, somebody, like, step out of that mirror. And I'm like, no, sir. Take your ass right back where you came from. This is my safe space. And they leave.
There you go. Well, you told him.
I sure did. Because in my book, if you're coming out of a freaking mirror, ain't good about you. Mm-mm. Nothing. Mm-mm. Nothing good.
No.
Mm-mm. You are not good. You're not dressed in good. You're not wearing good. You're not smelling good. Like,
stinky.
None of it.
Stinky things come out of mirrors.
Yes, I forgot to say that. So if you guys listened last week, that's a little bit of charm for you. So anyway, we're going to kick it off and we're going to start with The Phenomenal Poltergeist.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you seen any of this movie?
I'm trying to think. Yes, I did see bits and pieces of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I say bits and pieces because I just recall being curled up on the couch in the fetal position with my hands over my eyes. And every once in a while, I'd peek through my fingers.
Were you little?
Yeah. I can't remember.
Like 29?
Yeah, right. No, I'm 29 now. What are you talking about?
It was just this morning.
That's right.
Okay, so if you don't know Poltergeist, here's like the gist. It's this family of five, the Freelings, I think that's their names, the husband, the mom, the older daughter, the middle son, and then the little girl, who everybody knows as Carol Ann. She's the one that says, "They're here." Remember that?
Yes.
All too well.
That was their tagline, wasn't it? They're here.
Exactly.
With the staticky TV.
Right. So they live in this like bomb neighborhood that's like upper middle class and these really pretty big houses or, you know, whatever. And the activity kicks off and it's like starts off small initially. And it's like, you know, the mom notices, you know, one morning at breakfast, she leaves the room, comes back into the kitchen and like the chairs are all stacked up on the table.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that?
That was scary.
And she asked Carol Ann and she's like, "They did it," or whatever the hell she said. I haven't seen it in a while. And so then, you know, the dad comes home that night and she's like, "Oh, come see," whatever. And she puts Carol Ann in this like circle that she drew on the floor.
Yeah.
And she like slides across
with
the floor.
With the helmet on her head.
Right. Yeah, the football helmet. Remember that? And he's like, "What the hell?" And, you know, does it again. And she's like, "My butt hurts." And so then it escalates from there. And, you know, long story short, it turns out that the neighborhood was built on, it was like phase one, I think, of like the development. And the neighborhood was built on an old burial site, like an old cemetery.
So were the other houses haunted?
They never said.
No, this is make-believe, right? So,
mm-hmm. This is make-believe.
All right. Not based on a true story.
This is Hollywood.
So. Okay. So, right. Fiction.
Right.
All right. So, none of the other houses
fictitious.
Are haunted.
Fictitious.
Okay.
So, the headstones were moved, but the bodies were not.
Yeah.
So, so they left the bodies and built on top of all of that, which, rude.
Right?
Super rude.
So, super disrespectful to those.
Super duper disrespectful. So if you can't hear that, that's my dogs protesting in the background. They are warding off the crickets.
Yeah, they got to protect the house against the crickets.
Mm-hmm, the moths. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they find out that the house was built on this site where the bodies still are, but the headstones were moved and all kinds of crap is going on. And the energies, the dead are attracted to Carol Ann and her energy. And they, you know, take her into the closet, which is really a portal. And we talked about portals last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Not a mirror, however. And she's in this portal. And then they have, what's her name? The small lady. And she comes in and she does. You guys know the movie. It's such a good movie. Such a good movie. But a static-y TV? No, thank you. I want no part of that. So in any event, you guys, the movie, the set was considered to be haunted, like cursed rather. It was cursed because here's what happened. So the movie itself, like the franchise, is considered one of the most cursed franchises of all time. And they ended up making three of them and then rebooted Poltergeist in like 2015, I think, which why do they keep doing this? Leave well enough alone.
It's called money. They're going to think they're going to make a buck. They're going to do it.
I guess. So it is said we're going to have a chat. But they say the curse originated with the use of real skeletons on the set. And that was not made public. Nobody knew about that until Jo Beth Williams, who played Diane Freeling, who was the wife slash mom in the movie. She talked about this and it was like, I want to say it was like one of those shows they did on like VH1, I Love the 80s or something like that. I can't remember, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
So she talked about that and how she found out and the crew found out that they had actually used real skeletons on the set. So there's a scene in the movie where they are building a swimming pool in their backyard. There's this huge rainstorm and, you know, thunder and it's like creepy. It was a dark and stormy night. It was one of those. And she is trying to get Robbie because Robbie had been taken by the tree or some crap. Like he was scared of the tree that was like right outside his room and the branch like broke into his window and like grabbed him and he's in the tree and she's trying to get him and all of this, a distraction so that they could take Carol Ann from the family. Basically like what went down real dirty. Like anyway, so Diane, the mom slash wife, in her, you know, attempts to get Robbie, she slips into the pool, which is a big, giant hole. And she's in there and she's trying to climb her way out. And it's like a muddy mess in there full of water. And then corpses start popping up. And what the hell?
And unbeknownst to her, they are real life corpses.
Unbeknownst to Jo Beth Williams, who plays Diane Freeling, these are legit skeletons, like real people.
You know, the guy who tried to save a buck because fake skeletons were too expensive and the real skeletons were cheaper and obviously more authentic.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would have hunted him down and
make him sleep with the fishes.
Beat his ass. Beat his butt.
So according to the film's assistant prop master, Bruce Casson, the skeletons were in fact real. So he did confirm this or corroborate. And they came from the Carolina Biological, which at that time in the 80s, it was a place where medical schools would get bodies, skeletons and such for research and whatever. Like, it was, you know, totally legit. But, you know, it was legit for medical students, not on a movie set.
He brought the mad bad mojo. Mm-hmm. He brought the bad
well
mojo.
It wasn't just him. It was, you know, Spielberg was behind that too. But anyway, so, you know, he went on to say that at the time, as far as he can recall, you know, I have no memory. They didn't have replica skeletons, and to try to make them was like super pricey. So they went the other way and they got the humans. So, you know, you, sir, got what you asked for.
Unfortunately, you asked sadly. For trouble.
Mm-hmm. So he, Kasson, didn't believe in the curse. And according to him, he said that the filming on that set was like filming on any other set. There was nothing out of the ordinary, but there were a lot of people that disagreed with him. So, again, I'll say, in the movie, the Freelings, the family, you know, nice upper class, upper middle class family, they move into this home and it's this like, you know, cool neighborhood, up and coming, phase one. And these strange things start to happen and it becomes a freaking nightmare. And she, Diane, you know, in the heavy rains, these skeletons are unearthed in the swimming pool. And the development has been built on this gravesite. And these, you know, these people, these bodies have been denied a final resting place. And that's just super rude. Disrespectful.
Right.
So in real life, Steven Spielberg and Toby Hooper, they are two nice upper middle class filmmakers, you know, mimicking the film. They move the movie onto this set, like this nice looking upper middle class, whatever. And without telling the actors, they do use these actual human skeletons as props in the movie. And then the weird begins, like right from the jump. So there's lightning strikes, there's accidents, and the cast and the crew start whispering about, you know, this curse or whatever that might be going on, and that the dead are taking revenge upon the kids and the cast. And, you know, I don't know. It's so crazy to me that they were using these real skeletons.
Well, didn't they try to have somebody do an exorcism on the set?
I think a couple of times. But it might have been when they were filming the second one.
The second one?
Yeah, I don't think it was when they filmed the first one.
And because that guy, Will Sampson, he ended up dying.
Yeah, he was in the second one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he
right,
was.
Right. But he ended up dying in the middle of a kidney transplant.
It was after, I think.
Was
yeah.
it after?
Mm-hmm. So it did seem like, you know, in the movie, the dead were targeting the kids, and it seemed like, you know, art was imitating life because that's how it seemed to happen in real life. And or life was imitating art. What is it? Art, life was imitating art. It doesn't matter. You guys know what I mean. So the first crazy thing, or maybe not crazy, but so there was Dominic Dunn, who played Dana Freeling, and she was the teenage daughter. And so this was like her first big film, or maybe her first film, period. I don't know. Anyway, so the movie like really catapulted her, and, you know, she became a well-known name. So in any event, in 81, she went into a relationship with this guy named John Sweeney, who was a chef at one of the trendy restaurants in LA. And it is said that he was really abusive and jealous and angry and, you know, just not a nice fella, if you will. And they used to fight all the time. And he would reportedly like beat the crap out of her. I mean, like,
jerk.
What the hell, man? So I guess like things just took a turn. You know, she'd had enough and they got into like a pretty nasty fight. And so I think it was like he had strangled her and she tried to leave and he like jumped on the hood of the car and all. I mean, like, it was ridiculous. And so she ended up moving out and killing off the relationship. And how do you think that went? Not very well.
No, he mm-hmm. went after her.
Oh, yeah, he did. So, yeah, according to the police reports, on the night before Halloween in 1982, which, you know, it's never a good time to murder anybody, but on Halloween, come on. Never. So he had carved a chocolate mask of her face. Isn't that creepy? And that's delivered creepy. It to her door. That's super creepy. So he delivers it. They argue. And obviously he's still not taking no for an answer. And he strangles her. And strangles her into unconsciousness. So when the cops arrive, he tells them that he killed his girlfriend and tried to kill himself. Why he didn't succeed is beyond me. Come on, universe. So he's thinking that he had killed her, but what he really did was he strangled her into a coma. And she ended up being in that coma for 4 days and was kind of like, you know, they didn't know. It was like touch and go, basically.
Right.
And then she ended up passing away on November 4th. Which is super sad. She was so young.
Yeah. And this was like 6 months after the Poltergeist movie was done, right?
Yeah, it had already been released. I want to say like it was, yeah, just so sad. And from that, like that death, her death, he only served 4 years in prison. And after that, he got out, changed his name, and who knows what the hell he's doing now. So it's just ridiculous. Super ridiculous. So, you know, I had talked earlier about Kasten, who's the prop master, where he talks about not feeling that curse. And he, you know, kind of thought it was a joke. But some of the other things that went down with like the kids in particular is that, you know, one of the creepy things about the movie is the clown. Remember the clown? Sits at the end of like Robbie's bed.
Yes.
Okay. So the mechanical clown had malfunctioned when they were filming a scene and it strangled Oliver Robbins, who plays Robbie, the youngest son, or the only son, rather.
Right, the middle child, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's always the middle child.
It is. Didn't we talk about that with the little people, the fairies? It's like the middle child and...
The third child.
Oh, the third, you're right. The third child and the quiet one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Robbie. The thing malfunctions while they're filming this scene, and... Oliver Robbins was supposedly almost killed because the crew thought that the strangulation was just like really good acting. So he's like struggling, can't breathe, is freaking out, and they're like, good job, kid.
Yeah. Until he starts turning mm-hmm. blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So along with the reveal of the skeletal nature of the curse, Jo Beth Williams had said in, I think it was like the E! True Hollywood Story. Did you see that?
No,
it was really good. They covered a lot of stuff. But anyway, she said that every night when she got home from filming Poltergeist, that she would find that the pictures in her home were tilted and turned and like they had been messed with. Like, who's got time to mess with that stuff every day?
Right. So I wonder if she brought something home from the set and just brought that negative energy to the house,
mm-hmm.
whatever it was, mm-hmm. and it just started messing with things around the house.
Yeah, that's what I would say. That's what I would say. So, you know, I think one of the other stories is that, you know, there's the author, James Caan, and he says that, you know, he had been asked to write the novelization of the movie. So he took it from, you know, that book to more of like the movie script. And that when he was finishing the novel, a freak lightning bolt struck the building that he was working in. So, you know, that could be like pure coincidence, like, oh, whatever. But,
oh, no, there's no such thing as coincidence.
Right. I think a lot of people could say that, though. And they're like, oh, a lightning bolt. But the facing on the air conditioning unit blew off, flew across the room and hit him in the back. How freaking freak is that?
Right?
It's super freak. So he said that after about half a minute or a minute, the lights flickered and went on, and then every video game in the room started playing itself. What
run,
the crap?
Run. Run for the hills.
Right?
Run.
Seriously. It's just not cool. So the success of the movie, I mean, that's just part one. Poltergeist, the original. They went on to make a sequel, which not my favorite.
Well, are the sequels any
sometimes
better?
Sometimes, but not in this case. I did not care for it. I recently watched it, like, I don't know, about a month or so ago, because I hadn't seen it in years.
Did you see the third one also?
I did.
And how did it compare?
It was worse.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But that's just me. The first one is hands down my favorite. I thought it was such a good movie. So in any event, so they do the first one. It was so successful. They're like, oh yeah, let's do a second one. Let's do this all over again and
make more money.
Revive the curse. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you know what they did for the second one?
No.
Any guesses as to...
Don't tell me they used real skeletons.
They used real skeletons again.
Are you serious?
Yes.
They didn't learn the first time?
They didn't.
Or they just didn't believe?
Maybe a combination, or maybe just didn't give a crap.
Or just didn't want to spend the money again.
Right.
They're just being right. Stingy bastards.
Exactly.
Again.
So you already talked about Will Sampson, and he plays the mystical Indian in the movie. And in real life, he was a shaman. And so he was so upset about the curse and them using these real bodies that he wanted to, you know, do a clearing of sorts. Like, I don't want to say exercise because that's not quite what it is, but he did want to do a clearing. And so he did a blessing to clear the set of the evilness or the curse or whatever it is. And did it work? I mean, I don't really know, because he, you know, less than a year later died from complications from a kidney transplant,
which should have been standard.
Right. That's a pretty
common.
Yeah, it's pretty common. And even in the 80s.
Yeah, even in the 80s. That should have been.
It wasn't like so brand new that they're like, oh, God, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, it's not. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Groundbreaking.
Mm-mm. Not by a long shot. So, you know, I think, again, somebody could look at that and be like, well, I mean, surgical complications. Who's not heard of that? But, you know, you start lining all this stuff up together and it ain't looking too pretty. It just ain't. So after that, in the second one there, I know you don't know this, but there's like this evil preacher named Cain, and he comes to the door and he's like he is shady looking AF. I mean, really shady looking. So in the second Poltergeist, he looks all gaunt and pale and just bleh, like a skeleton with some flesh.
Ew.
But it turns out that he actually was battling cancer. So his name is Julian Beck, and he was suffering from advanced stomach cancer. And this was going on during the filming. And soon after the film was complete, he passed away. And so they put another notch in the curse belt, because it was just, you know, but he knew it was terminal cancer. Right.
But another death associated mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. the franchise, with the
exactly.
Poltergeist franchise.
Exactly. So even though Beck and Sampson were older and, you know, unhealthy to begin with, you add those to the list, like you said. I mean, it's another, what's the word I'm looking for? You know what I mean?
It adds to the story.
Yeah, it does. It does. So then there's Lou Perryman. So he was in the first Poltergeist and he had a small part. He was like a construction worker.
Okay.
In the first one. So in 2009, he's 67. He's chilling at home in Austin, Texas. And someone comes knocking on the door. That someone is Seth Tatum. Who is Seth Tatum? I'm about to tell you. So according to a witness, the two had a brief conversation. They went inside to Lou's house, and then Seth leaves alone. When the police searched the residence, they found Perryman dead, his body hacked with an axe. What the ever-living S? I mean, for real.
And that's, what, 20 years after the movie, though, right?
Yeah, that was 2009. A long time, more than 20 years, right? Mm. Yeah. Anyway, so apparently Tatum had chosen the location at random in the midst of like some kind of psychotic break. I guess he goes as like walking down the street or some crap, wandering aimlessly, and walks for 3 miles and then knocks on Lou's door. Like, of all the doors he passed, he knocked on Lou's door, and the rest is history. Like, he ended up freaking hacking him. It's so crazy. Like, what makes it so crazy is that he was tied.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that he was tied to this movie.
That's nuts.
Yeah, that's what makes it so crazy. So then there is the obvious, like the super famous passing of Heather O'Rourke, who played Carol Ann Freeling. And so when she starred in the movie in the first one, she was 5 and oh my God, so freaking cute with that long blonde hair and those blue eyes. And
yeah.
I know, super sad. So she went on and she was in the second movie and she was also in the third.
How old was she when she was in the third movie?
12, okay. I think it was.
All right.
11, so 12, something like
pre-teen.
That.
Preteen.
Yeah, preteen. So, you know, her involvement, like the rest of these people that, you know, had these accidents or whatever and deaths and, you know, it just, it came with a price being in there. So after appearing in all three of the movies, she died tragically and very mysteriously when she was 12 years old. And in the middle of shooting Poltergeist 3, she was rushed to Cedars-Sinai, where she died in the middle of surgery. Immediately after her death, her manager had mistakenly kind of released a press, whatever, you know what I mean. He had released a statement and said that she had the flu and passed from complications or whatever. But actually, it turns out that she had died from septic shock during surgery to repair an acute bowel obstruction. So Heather had been born with what's called stenosis of the intestines, and it was never properly diagnosed.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. So her doctors had told her parents that she had Crohn's disease, and you know, the parents ended up suing. They had a lawsuit and said that her death could have been prevented if they had diagnosed everything correctly, which, you know, absolutely true. But it's just, it's so super sad.
It is sad.
And such a freak thing, you know, like, I mean, I don't know. So anyway, they go on to make a reboot in like 2015, I think. I think it was 2015. And the director of this one is Gil Keenan. And he reports that when they were filming the movie, the reboot, that their equipment would fail all the time.
They didn't have skeletons on this one, did they?
Not that I remember. I watched the reboot reluctantly. I watched it, but I did. I did see it. I'm like, stop remaking these good movies. Don't reboot them. I don't like it. Knock it off.
But they got your dollar.
Nuh-uh. Well, kind of. DirecTV. They kind of got my dollar. So in any event, he does say that the equipment would fail on the set and that the curse would follow him home from filming.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So he rented a house while they were filming. And he says that the house he rented was haunted by a female dressed in black. Like when they're either dressed in black or white. Like that's always the story.
Good and bad.
Mm-hmm. So she was definitely there and she didn't follow him back to L.A. where he lives, but would follow him back and forth from the set, you know, filming from the set where they filmed to the house that he was renting. So I'm like, sir, no. Why did you, knowing this was haunted, go stay there? No. Mm-mm. So he says, the location of the house during shooting, I chose because it had a strange and unnecessary feel that the houses of this particular community were built around. We found throughout production that we had persistent and repeatable equipment field only on that strange plot of land. For instance, lights that would turn on anywhere else in the neighborhood would blow out the second you try to light them on this lot. What the crap?
Cursed.
And then you go on with the production, which I know there's a lot of money and stuff tied up in all this, but it's like you have said, like every time we talk about like a haunted house or something, you're like, move out. Why don't you move out?
Right.
Oh, good Lord. Anyway, so there's more to the story, apparently. So a couple, Dusty and Jamie Lynn, bought the Cabbage Patch that was owned by Heather O'Rourke. Where did they buy it? Any guesses? On eBay. Probably sitting next to an old Victorian mirror.
Right? Like, so cabbage, like a Cabbage Patch doll.
Yeah, a legit Cabbage Patch doll.
Okay.
Yeah. So Heather owned it.
Okay.
So I don't know if this was like a doll on set or like it was her doll. Whatever. Like, either way, it doesn't matter. So they buy this doll off eBay. And then the weird happens. The doll arrives on October 30th.
Halloween.
The day before Halloween. Right. The day before Halloween, which is the same day that Dominique Dunn had passed away. Or no, that she got attacked.
Right.
Because then she died on November 4th. Anyway, so they say the doll arrived on the 30th of October. We were in awe. Halloween Day, we left for our anniversary trip to Reno. Our anniversary is November 1st. While in Reno, we got a call that my wife's stepbrother had been in a terrible accident while playing soccer. He ended up with a ruptured spleen and broken ribs. Playing soccer? Like, what the?
Gosh.
Did they mean rugby? I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. So due to internal bleeding, he was hospitalized for 5 days. 3 days later, my father-in-law became ill. Within 2 days, he was in a coma.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. He was diagnosed with encephalitis. He remained in a coma for 5 to 6 days, and we almost lost him. Miraculously, he woke up and was released after a 9-day stint. He is still in rehab because of brain damage. We thought we could be back to our lives after a very trying few weeks. And then on December 2nd, my wife found out her childhood friend, John, had committed suicide by gunshot.
Oh, no.
December 8th, our good friend, Dawn, died of heart failure. She was 33. Shortly after, my mother was having agonizing pain in her hip. She ended up having surgery. And on January 7th, my wife's uncle, Jeff, passed away from a heart attack. He had no known medical conditions. January 26th, my wife was hospitalized for the night with a rare intestinal infection. The end of January, I left my job for a new company. On February 12th, I was let go. February 14th, we had to put our dear dog Zeus down. Early March, our 4-year-old Pomeranian lost a tooth.
I don't know. What?
The poltergeist curse.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know seriously? What the hell the lost tooth has to do with anything, but whatever. I know that right there. I was like, why is that part of the story? I don't even understand.
It was obviously very, very traumatic.
It was very traumatic. Very traumatic. Shortly after, my wife was told something was wrong with her heart and they suspended her driver's license. She's had to wear heart monitors for 24 hours twice and they still don't know what's wrong. On March 7th, due to an error, Kern County Child Support levied my account right before a bunch of debit purchases and auto drafts cleared. This left us with a negative account balance of almost $2,000. That sucks. My car broke down 2 days prior. Last week, the doctors notified my mother that her surgery not only failed, she had a fracture in her hip. She had a hip replacement on April 8th. On top of all this, my wife and I have not gotten along. There is constant tension in the air, and the topic of divorce has come up more than once. So then,
are they linking all of this back to the Cabbage Patch doll?
Mm-hmm. According to them, as soon as they got this doll, all hell broke loose. And it's like one thing after another after another. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, they ended up with a paranormal investigator coming in and tried to clear the doll and whatever. And he had some experiences, whatever. In the end, they ended up putting the doll in a glass case that is blessed and have since not had any bad luck.
They didn't get rid of it?
It's like Annabelle. No, they didn't freaking get rid of it. I know.
Golly. Okay, so I have this bad luck thing in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting rid of it.
Yes. Agreed. No. Burn it. Drown it. Like, launch it into outer space. Whatever you got to do.
Right.
Freaking get rid of it. No, I totally agree. I will say this. The thing that convinced me the most that there was a curse was the Pomeranian tooth.
Exactly. Once the dog loses a tooth, that's it. Line has been crossed.
The demons are out.
Get rid of the dang doll.
Dude, I just don't understand. Poor puppy. I can't with the tooth. I just can't. I'm like, that's what you chose to put in the that major list.
Yeah, screw, you know, the mom and the brother and everybody else. Oh, the puppy lost a tooth.
Seriously.
Get rid of the doll.
That junk was so funny. So, yeah, there's said to be a curse on the Poltergeist movie. I know, crazy. So next up, we're going to talk about The Omen.
Okay.
And I know you've never seen this, so I'm going to give you a quick rundown.
I may have.
Really?
Is it the one with the little boy?
Yeah.
What's the little boy's name?
Damien?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was another one where I think I kind of...
What? You've seen this?
Watched through my fingers, because he tried to go into church and he ran out.
Haven't we all? Just kidding. Yeah, a lot of creepy crap. This kid was not the best kid.
So, yeah. So I You're right. I don't watch scary movies because I have watched scary movies and had nightmares.
Well, if you're watching crap like this, I can see why you don't want to give the others a fair shot.
Right. So I remember he goes into a church and he pitches a fit and runs out.
Okay. So here's the gist of the movie. So a couple adopts a kid after they deliver a stillborn baby. Do you remember that? It doesn't matter. I'll tell you all about it. So deaths and accidents, quote unquote accidents, start occurring and the family starts looking into, or not the family, the dad starts looking into the kid's background and realizes he may have adopted the Antichrist. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, great.
That's like the long and short. Like, we're not going into depth. It ain't good, y'all. It ain't good.
And for some reason, I remember a priest trying to do an exorcism on
priest and rabbi.
They all walk into a bar. And but bad things end up happening to the priest, if I remember right.
Like, don't they always?
Right, those poor priests.
I know.
They're just trying to do good
things.
They're
just trying to do good things. Spread the love and light.
Right.
Apparently, darkness doesn't like that. Beg off. Okay, so with The Omen, things kicked off like before production even started.
Seriously? I know.
Seriously. So they say, I'm just going to say it like that from now on. They say.
And for those who are listening, she puts her fingers up in the air and makes the little bunny movement. They say.
It's always me telling our listeners what you're doing. That's funny. I do that. They say. Yes.
She does the bunny fingers.
With my polished nails.
Oh, but they're such cute polished
nails.
They
are cute. I have these cute flowers. Anyway, not the point. I don't want to make this funny.
Too late.
I know.
So they say.
Okay. So legitimately, it is said that when The Omen was just an idea, you know, when they're talking about it and they're like, oh, we got this great idea for this crap. Just in talking about it, producer Harvey Bernhardt had received a grave warning. So according to the LA Times, an advertising executive named Bob Munger had approached Harvey with an idea involving the Antichrist, which who wouldn't jump at that crap?
I'd jump in the other direction.
Right. Into oncoming traffic. So Munger had pitched the concept with caution. And Harvey said he warned us that he thought the devil didn't want us to make this picture. Listen, then why are you pitching this idea to me? Hey, I have this great idea. However, the devil doesn't want us to make it. Like, I just don't even know. Marie looks.
So did he meditate or something and the devil spoke to him? I mean,
I don't give two craps.
Or did he have a dream?
I do not care. I mean,
but the devil doesn't want us to do this. But you know what? We're going to make it back and we're going to go do it anyway.
Right. Dude, I've got this great idea, but listen. No. It's like when we talked about the mirror and you're selling it on eBay. Remember?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're like, I have this. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was giving it to your ex that you're about to leave. I have this great possessed mirror.
Right.
So Harvey and Munger in later interviews both recalled how they predicted the curse way back in the day when the idea is being pitched and all that. And Munger recalls words of warning. And he says, I said, if you make this movie, you're going to have some problems. If the devil's greatest single weapon is to be invisible, and you're going to do something which is going to take away his invisibility to millions of people, he's not going to want that to happen. The devil was at work and he didn't want that film made. What in the holy hell?
I just got
tingles
down my spine.
Seriously. And like to put it like that, like, oh, he wants to be invisible. Don't tell his secrets. That's crazy.
That's crazy. Crazy talk. Yeah.
What's even crazier is that they move forward. I didn't care for that. Not even a little bit.
No.
Okay. So the problems kicked off before the film even began production. So they say that the thing that really kicked off the events, like the catalyst, is that the lead actor, who is Gregory Peck, his son killed himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I know, super sad. So he shot himself in the head in June of 1975. And then 2 months later, they start production.
Oh, jeez.
I know. I can't even. Like, that would be... I don't have kids, and I'm so glad, because I don't even know what I would do if that crap happened. It'd be horrible.
But what would you do if your puppy lost his tooth?
The devastation. It's too hard to imagine. I can't.
The struggle is real. We must move on.
I know. Don't ever bring that up to me again.
Okay. I'll try not to.
I should go check on their teeth right now.
The devil's at work. Goodness. The cabbage pitch.
So Gregory Peck continues with production, which how in the H he picked himself up and went to go do this movie 2 months later, I don't even know.
He must have been under contract.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure. But dude, people are under contract all the time. I mean, the Lindsay Lohans and whoever, which, you know, God willing, she's good now. But all the actors over time that haven't had, they have missed time over way less because they were out drinking or whatever the
or
hell.
Or he was burying himself in his work
to
escape the pain and the grief.
I guess. But so listen, so his son, you know, kills himself, passes away. Peck is flying to London to film this movie. And what happens on the way? The freaking plane is struck by lightning.
What?
Yeah. Struck by lightning. A few weeks later, executive, that's a word, not the other one. Mark Neufeld boarded a plane from L.A. His plane also struck by lightning. And he refers to that experience as the roughest 5 minutes he's ever spent on an airliner. Listen, probably the roughest 5 minutes in your life.
And lightning strikes are supposed to be super rare.
These are lightning. Yes.
And now we've had them on two different movie sets, basically associated with two different movies.
Yeah. And Poltergeist and now the Omen.
And the Omen twice.
Yeah.
In the same manner. Airplane, sky.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Stop flying.
Right. It's not like it affected people adjacent to the movie. It's not like, oh, my maid was flying and her plane got struck by lightning. It was people like directly tied. No, I know. And you know what happened? Production still went on. Because there's money to be made and money tied up. So anyway, Harvey Bernhardt, who we had talked about earlier, you know, he had the warning and the whatever. So he says that he started wearing a cross on the set. At one point, the team hired a small plane to do some aerial filming in the city. At the last minute, the plane, instead of going to them, it went to another group and ended up crashing and killing everybody on board.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. I know. Super crazy. So, like, it crashed on takeoff and everybody died. So, if the production, had gotten that plane and been on it to do that aerial filming, they would have died.
Wow.
So, you know, that was super tragic in that people lost their lives. But it was also, you know, like, whoever was looking out for them when that crap happened. Crazy.
His cross.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
So that plane was already cursed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. I know.
It's super crazy. So following that, Mark Neufeld, who we already talked about, his plane was struck when he was, you know, flying, was staying at the London Hilton with his wife. While they were there during the filming, the hotel was bombed by the Irish Republican Army in September of that year. So crazy. Like, so random. And I know these things happen, like terrorist acts and attacks and whatever, but another like super crazy experience to the same person tied to the same movie. Like, I don't even know. So in the movie, there's a scene where it's in the zoo and there's a group of wild baboons reacting violently to Damien's presence. Yada, yada. Do you remember that?
Yes.
So according to the director, Damien's mother, played by actress Lee Remick, was like super legitimately terrified. And so for the safety of the cast and crew, they brought in an animal trainer to handle the baboons. Well, he was killed the day after they shot there. And he was killed by a tiger who had grabbed him by the head and killed him instantly, apparently.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. So crazy. So even after the film was finished, the curse, you know, according to... I did it again.
Bunny fingers.
My air quotes. Yeah. The curse lived on, and it followed those involved with the filming. And, you know, there was just all kinds of tragedies. Like, in August of that year... I think this was after filming was done. So there was a special effects master named John Richardson. And in the movie, he had executed this like super gruesome decapitation in an accident. And so he was later involved in a pretty major accident. And he was in the Netherlands working on Richard Attenborough's A Bridge Too Far. So he had survived the accident in Holland, but his passenger, who was his assistant named Liz Moore, had not survived. And she had been beheaded. Just like in the movie.
Okay, so all of this stuff that happens,
mm-hmm.
I got to ask the question. I mean, you believe in manifestation,
mm-hmm.
okay? And, you know, we use it in the positive sense of, mm-hmm. you know, of waking up in the morning or whatever, you know, financial abundance will find me today. Mm-hmm. You know, today I'm in good health. Today is going to be a good day. You know, all these positive affirmations. Mm-hmm. So these good things manifest itself into our lives, into reality. So you're going to go off and make a movie about ghosts and paranormal activity and evil. And you are submersing your life into this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a case of all this evil manifesting itself into reality for these people?
Well, I think it's possible. I mean, especially if you consider that it's probably guaranteed nobody was protecting themselves in any way. Outside of, I think it was Harvey that said he ended up putting the cross on every day. He started wearing that cross.
Because now they're dabbling in the paranormal and mm-hmm. in evil, the evil side of it, the dark side of it.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that you have to be a believer? Because just like when you know, we've talked before about like a haunted house, so to speak, and a family will move in and they're like, oh my God, we're tormented every day. They move out, someone else moves in and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? We haven't had any experiences because... they don't believe or they don't acknowledge or whatever. So do you think there's some of that at play too?
Well, I've seen people who don't believe and they go off and do things
mm-hmm.
and bad stuff happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my boyfriend's a perfect example. He does not, you know, didn't believe in karma, didn't, you know, oh, F karma, this and within.
And karma's like, really?
Right. Within 2 minutes, karma turned around and got him.
Oh,
and I would tell him, I said, oh, you just messed up.
Wait, you know? Did you say that as you were backing off? As you're backing up and yeah, you're like,
right.
Well, I don't want to be struck.
Right. No, I told him. Well, we were in his truck and he was, you know, F this, F that and F karma. And I turned around and looked at him. I said, karma is going to get you. It happened within 2 minutes. Mm-mm. And I sat in there and laughed my ass off.
Oh, he's like, thank you, girlfriend.
Right. And it was funny. It got him good. Mm-hmm. Well, the situation was, and I know we're going off on a big tangent, but we were sitting in traffic and he wouldn't, you know, usually when you're sitting in traffic, you know, one car goes and the car from the other road goes and you kind of alternate, mm-hmm. right? Well, he was not willing to play
that game. Oh, like
a
four-way stop kind of thing?
Well, kind of, yeah. Well, he wasn't going to play that game and he wasn't letting anyone through and he was going to get out of there. And I'm like, Karma's going to get you. You were a jerk to those people back there. Karma's going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his friend in the back seat was inebriated and decided that he needed to go relieve himself in the woods. So he jumped out of the truck, ran into the woods, and the cars in front of us, the side road, 10 of them went through. Because that's and awesome. I sat there and laughed. I said, karma got you, karma mm-hmm. got you. And then his friend was fine. He got back in the truck and off we went. So he has believed in karma ever mm-hmm. since. So he mm-hmm. did not believe in karma, cussed karma,
mm-hmm.
karma bit him in the butt,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and now he believes.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to these movies, okay, these folks may or may not believe in, you know, and good or evil, but they are immersing their mm-hmm. lives into these evil stories and concepts and ideas. And they do it for months at a time,
oh, yeah.
filming these movies.
Years.
So
years.
Is it mm-hmm. this paranormal activity manifesting itself into reality? That's my question.
It's very possible. Just like when we talked in the last episode about the mirrors, and we were talking about Greg, I don't remember his last name, but he has like him and his wife do the tour with the kind of the haunted museum.
Right.
And
they
had the black glass mirror, and he kind of talked about it like it's a battery, you know, as people are like giving it their energy, it's taking that energy and using it to fuel its activity and the activity of the artifacts around it. So, you know, it's possible that it could be something like that. You know, they're constantly talking about this stuff, and they're talking about the devil, and they're talking about evil and whatever it is, and maybe giving it life.
Right.
Like a manifestation.
Right. I mean, I'm a total believer in it.
Yeah, me too.
In manifesting. Too. I mean, it's happened to me both good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And so
yes.
I'm very careful.
Careful what you think, what you say, yes. what you yes. write, what you...
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a total victim mm-hmm. of it both ways, mm-hmm. good ways and bad ways.
Yeah.
And so I'm very careful.
Right. And, very you careful. Know, we don't know also what these people individually or collectively were into.
Right.
On their personal time. Right. And, you know, just like you and I work in, we do light work. There are other people that practice other things, and you don't know about that all the time.
Right.
Nobody's like wearing that shirt that's like, you know, I do voodoo or whatever, you know, so you never know. And I think sometimes it just takes like that little seed, and then that thing starts to grow. So right. It could have been brought by a person. It could have been an object. It could have been the immersion in this, like, you know, this field, this topic, this activity, like whatever it is. It could have been a number of things.
Right.
And everybody just got that energy, you know, it's stuck to everybody.
Right. And I'm sure, you know, very few of them were protected.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So going back to that car accident. So it was John Richardson with his assistant, Liz Moore, and she died, got decapitated, very much like the movie scene.
Right.
So according to, I guess, the police reports, like, he was unconscious, comes to at the scene. And what does he see? There is a sign that says Omen, 66.6 kilometers.
Oh, my word.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my word.
Yeah. So on that same movie, A Bridge Too Far, which is the one that that John Richardson was working on mm-hmm. when he was in the Netherlands and had that accident. So on the film... on that same film, they had a stuntman. His name was Alf Joint. And, you know, working on the same film, he wound up in the hospital after one of his stunts went super duper wrong. So there was like a scene, I guess, where he was supposed to jump from a rooftop to an airbag or something, like some crap below. But when he fell, like, it was like a random, super strange and abrupt fall, like not at all what he was accustomed to doing because he was a professional. So when he woke up in the hospital, do you know what he told people?
What?
He was pushed. Right? I know. Dude, that was so creepy. Well,
thank goodness he lived to tell the story.
I know. Because it could have been way worse.
Yeah, he could have been decapitated.
Right. Or seen the sign for Omen.
Right.
Or lost a tooth.
Right. Or worse, his dog could have lost a tooth.
It just got real.
Right?
So we have just brought the freaking creep. I mean, this is creepy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what it is, manifestation or whatever. Like, I mean, I don't even know. But I'm going to say this. I am not working on a movie set where they're filming some crazy crap like
this. No, if I ever get invited to work on a movie set, which, you mm-hmm. know, happens all the time.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be happy mm-hmm. rainbows.
My Little Pony.
Right. Mm-hmm. Rainbows and unicorns and mm-hmm. glitter and happy stuff.
I think it would be super cool to go to a movie set, like a horror movie set. However, I am going to be dripping, like sopping wet in that holy water, like right. I said before, and have all my crystals and a rosary and you name it.
Right.
I'm going to be hooked up.
Yeah. Protected. All my accessories. Protected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you guys, we brought the good with part one of the cursed movie sets, and we are bringing you part two in the next episode because we got more. You want to know what it is? I'm going to tell you. Rosemary's Baby. We got some Exorcist and some other stuff. So stay tuned. Don't leave us. We're coming back with the goodness. And before we go, we want to remind you guys, please, please, please don't forget. We super duper appreciate you guys tuning in, always being with us. Make sure that you subscribe to the show and leave us a bomb.com review on iTunes because it really does help the show to keep growing and all that good stuff. So please, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. And subscribe to the show so you can keep following us and we can keep following you and loving each other and all that good stuff. If you have any stories or topics for episodes or questions or whatever, feel free to reach out at the Medium at themediummatters.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Medium Matters. And yeah.
All of the above.
All of the above. Courier pigeon, smoke signal. We do love you guys. Thank you again. Thank you so much for your support. I mean, we seriously would not be here if not for you. You guys mean the world to us. So reach out, please, please, please. We really enjoy interacting with all of you guys. Super good night. Love and light to one and all. We love you.
Good night.
His hair, son.
At last, saved after all these years, stuck up this cursed mountain, licking moss with only a crow for a friend. How'd you find me?
Just walking the dog. Need a lift back down?
Run for a crow?
Adventures never far with the Land Rover Discovery Sport. Now £339 per month on Land Rover personal contract hire.
Oh, heated seats.
Land Rover. Above and beyond.
Initial rental £4,068. 48th month term. Subject to status. 8,000 miles per annum. Conditions apply. Offer ends 31st of March. Participating retailers only. Such Land Rover offers.